Brexit's a depressing topic for most people here in Scotland, but as things stand, it is very likely to be the reality. It has profound implications for many areas of life, and our outdoors environment and the countryside are likely to be impacted in lots of different ways. That, it seems, is why the Scottish Wildlife Trust has seized the bull by the horns and come up with a plan that it says can turn Brexit to the advantage of the environment. Johnny Hughes is the Trust's chief executive, and I'm with him now in sunny Leith. Johnny, explain the concept behind this new plan that you've come up with.
For a long time in my career, around about 25 years, I've been working to try and reform the Common Agricultural Policy with my colleagues across the UK and across the rest of Europe. There are many, many great things that the European Union has brought us, not least the swathe of legislation which has helped protect our habitats, our waters, our marine environment. But I think everybody's agreed that the Common Agricultural Policy was always fundamentally flawed. And I think with Brexit, we've got a lot of threats that come with Brexit to the environment, but we've also got an opportunity to look afresh at the Common Agricultural Policy and redesign something at a UK and hopefully a Scotland level as well, which I think will serve our farmers, our landowners and our environment better than is currently the case. So the idea behind this policy, and we're calling it a blueprint because we're kind of hoping it's the kind of policy you could pick up and if you're a civil servant you could start to implement within 6 months. It's a different kind of policy. It's not just calling for a range of measures, but it's explaining exactly how they might work and how government exactly might do them. And what we're calling for is really a shift in the way the £600 million of support which goes into farming and forestry and other land-based enterprises at the moment to be spent in a very different way. At the moment, it's money without a policy purpose, and we're saying it should have a purpose, and that purpose should be the delivery of public benefits for public goods. And what I mean by that is a higher quality natural environment, which ultimately actually saves the taxpayer money, because it means that we'll have less cleanup costs for the pollution going into our rivers. It means that we'll protect our fertile soils from erosion. It means we'll have a thriving natural environment which will attract people to Scotland to come and spend money in our rural economies through tourism. And it means we'll leave our environment in a better state for the next generation for the first time actually in many, many centuries, because we've been degrading our environment for not just in the last few decades but actually for centuries. So this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to actually turn the tide and use that £600 million worth of taxpayers' money in a very, very different way.
So it's basically taking the money that's given to land managers and farmers and diverting it towards environmental benefit.
Indeed. So what we're proposing is a set of three payments. There'll still be a what you might call a basic payment. At the moment it's called a single farm payment, a basic farm payment. There will still be a base payment which will support farmers, but they will be expected to deliver public benefit for that public money.
Rather than the kind of bog standard payment just for owning a field, or even not owning a field, but having bought the rights to the field.
Well, at the moment, farmers are getting a level of support which is not connected to any delivery of any clear public benefit. There are some minimum requirements. There's something called good agricultural and environmental condition, but it's a very, very low bar. It's a very low set of requirements. So you're effectively getting money for being in business at the moment, yes. And what we're saying is we need to raise the bar and have an expectation that farmers and land managers should be delivering higher environmental standards whilst at the same time delivering really good quality food. And I think there's a huge opportunity here for Scotland to actually carve out a niche in terms of high quality marketable produce with much higher value within the market. You know, the world population is growing, food demand is going up, but demand for high quality produce linked to special places like Scotland, I think, provides us with a fantastic opportunity to actually add value to the food we're growing. But we're only going to do that if we get the other side of the equation right and we're honest about where this food is coming from. If it comes from a high-quality natural environment that we're investing in and we're taking a strong stewardship approach to, then that food will be seen as high quality and it will achieve a premium rate in the marketplace.
So specifically, does the present regime cause any specific environmental problems that we can point a finger at?
There's a number of issues. For example, if you take agriculture, because our land stewardship policy, I should say, covers agriculture, it covers forestry, it covers designated sites. It covers deer management and upland grouse moor management.
And water as well.
And water. Yeah. But if we take agriculture as a specific example, what we've actually done in the policy is for each of the different areas under the framework, we've set out what the challenges are. So if you like, the reason why we need a different approach and the reason why we need to spend money in a different way. So for agriculture, for example, we've identified some key problems which are in need of addressing at the moment. And there's four particular for agriculture. So the first one is soil degradation and erosion. Our soils are really a fundamental public and private asset on which our future productivity and indeed the profit that we get from agriculture depends. So we need to protect those soils, and at the moment they're being degraded in many parts of the country. The second one is the fact that agriculture is a substantial generator of greenhouse gas emissions, which is contributing to climate change, and that really needs to be addressed in a systematic way. The third one, obviously dear to the heart of the Scottish Wildlife Trust, one of the reasons why we exist, is the loss of biodiversity through habitat loss on farms, but also the simplification of habitats on farms, but also the inappropriate use of things like pesticides and fertilisers. And the fourth one is water pollution arising from inappropriate agricultural activities, such as the spreading of manures too close to watercourses and the chemicals that are being used on fields getting into watercourses and causing pollution in those watercourses, which is a costly problem in itself.
So all the cash that currently goes to farmers and land managers would be used for this. Would it all still go to those farmers and land managers?
Yes, it would still go to the land management sector. Let's broaden it out, because our policy includes forestry,
of course,
woodlands, and includes other types of land management apart from farming. Now, what we've budgeted on, and it is a costed proposal, we've basically taken the £639 million that went to farmers in 2015-16, and we've said, how could that be spent differently? How should that be used to best effect to actually benefit the people and the environment and the economy, the rural economy of Scotland? So yes, it would still be the same amount of money, but it would be spent in a more targeted and a more sensible way. As I say, it would be linked to the provision of environmental goods and services. They're sometimes called ecosystem services. It's not an easy term to explain always, but effectively they're the services that ecosystems provide for us as human beings. And if we abuse ecosystems and we pollute them, they tend to lose their value and they tend to lose the potential profits that could be provided to us. So we need to change that, get that right, and by doing that we'll actually be adding value to our farmed ecosystems rather than destroying value, which we're doing at the moment.
But of course all this assumes that all the money that's being spent on subsidies is going to continue to be spent on subsidies by the government. The £640 million question is, will that continue, do you think?
Well, this is a really political question, obviously, and it's a political question at both a UK and a Scotland level, and there will be
the whole policy is a political issue.
I'm sure there's going to be some very interesting discussions. There is currently, as we speak, discussions going on between the Scottish Government and the UK Government as to what will be eventually devolved back after the Brexit negotiations have been finalised. But I think in the future we could well see pressures on the budgets which are currently going into the land management sector and agriculture in particular, because about half the European Union budget, I think it's around about kind of 40% at the moment, goes into the support of farming across Europe. It's a huge and a very significant part of what the European Union is, actually supporting farmers. So will we be able to keep up those kind of levels of payments, particularly with all the promises that were made of £350 million going to the NHS? And well, yes, you might laugh. So, you know, we've got a £3.5 billion pot across the UK for agriculture. Can we continue to afford paying £3.5 billion to farmers as we exit the European Union, or will some of that money be taken for schools, hospitals and so on? That remains to be seen. But I think the beauty of our policy is that if that figure was, say, reduced by a third and we went down to, in Scotland, £400 million, say, you could still apply the basic formula that we've set out in the blueprint and use that money in the same way that we've set out. There would just be less of it. So it would mean that some farmers might struggle to stay in business.
But that would be the inevitable consequence of cutting subsidies, whatever, wouldn't it?
Exactly, yeah. It would be, yeah.
So do you think food production can be maintained at present levels under your planned regime?
I think in some areas, yes. So I think in some lowland systems, it's very unlikely to affect production in any significant way. What we're saying for lowland farm systems is really you can still have your crop of barley or whatever, but it's on the margins that you should be providing for biodiversity and using things like buffer strips between crops and watercourses to protect
water.
Yeah, that's right. Riparian meaning kind of riverbank woodlands. Introducing features like that, and where you've got those kind of features on farms where you might have a wet corner of a field, try and use that as a small wildlife refuge. Those areas tend to be pretty unproductive anyway. Linear features, yes, they do take a very, very small proportion of the land out of production, but that will have very limited impact on the yield, particularly as yields are increasing, as technology increases in terms of crop technology. In the uplands, what we're proposing is that there's more sustainable stocking densities. So there won't be as many sheep in the uplands under our system, but the farmers that are grazing those sheep will be compensated for by the fact that there's fewer animals. The reason why we're proposing that is pretty simple, and that's to recover the soils and to recover the vegetation in the uplands, which has become increasingly less productive as we've overgrazed it over the centuries and recent decades as well. So we need to give those uplands the chance to recover. And the only way of doing that is to reduce the stocking densities and reducing the grazing pressure on that system. So yes, there will be a drop-off in terms of the kilos of lamb coming off those hills, but there will be extra production, if you like, in terms of the vegetation and the soils recovering, which eventually will mean that we'll be able to put more animals on there.
Right, now, lots of people will look at this document with their own little special interests at heart. I'm going to pick on one that I know a little bit about, which is invasive non-native species. In this budget, there's about $5 million a year planned for dealing with non-native species. Now, I know with, for instance, the rhododendron problem alone, that could easily absorb the $5 million dealing with invasive rhododendron ponticum. So, is that enough?
Well, I think the first thing to say is that $5 million won't be the only money going into the control of invasive non-native species. At the moment, we have money coming from other sources, and include, ironically, from the EU LIFE programme, which has actually funded targeted control of things like rhododendron, for example. So that's not the only $5 million. There can be projects funded from elsewhere which can target specific areas or take a kind of catchment approach or a project in a particular area where we could eradicate invasives. You're right, $5 million doesn't seem like an awful lot of money, but I would also add that in our proposal under the natural capital enhancement payments that we're proposing, increasing wildlife habitat to above 12% of farm area will also mean that you'll be managing that habitat in an environmentally friendly way. So you can't, for example, have a 12% of your farm area covered in Himalayan balsam and say that's a wildlife habitat. You'd still need to manage the Himalayan balsam. So there's an awful lot of other money in the system which will be going to the management of wildlife habitats on farms.
And by its very nature.
And there would be an expectation that some of that would be invasive control. So that $5 million we see is for particular problem areas or where there's a particular issue, there could be a top-up grant to say, OK, we appreciate that you've got a real problem here and we need to get on top of that. There's this $5 million pot available for you to apply into to get the funds to do that.
But with being very specific about these pots of money for particular things, is there a danger that they'll just say, oh, we spent money on that, we've done our job, and there's no more money available for it, when, for instance, with rhododendrons, we know it's a huge problem?
Well, I would hope not. I mean, we've thought long and hard about how to structure these payments, and also what you might call the special funds, which are in addition to the three tiers. I mean, what we're proposing is, so I say three tiers, it's four tiers really. There's a regulatory tier which all farmers must comply with, irrespective of whether they choose to apply for support or not. Then there's a tier that we're calling natural capital maintenance payments. But then there's two payments above that, what we're calling natural capital enhancement payments and natural capital restoration payments. And they're for going the extra mile, they're for going above and beyond just the kind of basic mandatory requirements. If you look at the package and you look at then the special funds that we've set up, and they include things like a £15 million pot for peatland restoration, because we realise that about 600,000 hectares of peatlands across Scotland are in degraded state. That's a massive challenge. So we've thought long and hard about these extra pots of money, which, you know, can be used to top up those farmers which are facing particular challenges or have particular types of habitat in a degraded state on our land, which include areas which are particularly infested with non-native species and areas of peatland.
Another specific area is forestry. Just tell us a bit about what the plan is for forestry.
Well, you know, woodland cover at the beginning of the 20th century in Scotland was probably less than 4% of land area, which, if you look globally, that's one of the most alarming deforestation efforts I think that's gone on anywhere in any country of the world. Now, since then, we've recovered to around about 17-18%, but a lot of that is non-native plantation forestry. So what we're proposing in this policy is that we really do need to support the recovery of our woodlands in the future, and particularly our native woodlands. So what you'll see in the policy is that we've actually, in terms of the 600 million that can be spent, we're proposing a lot more of it actually goes into the creation of woodlands through planting and through targeted woodland creation in some areas, including commercial forests, but also through natural regeneration, through bringing down grazing pressure, through control of deer and sheep. So we think in the kind of post-climate change era that we're entering, the resilience of the uplands, the Scottish uplands, you know, really should be forests. So having a lot more forests in the Scottish uplands will help those landscapes, you know, respond to the challenges that climate change will bring in the future. We're already seeing, for example, a lot more erosion, a lot more landslips on our roads. In order to secure those upland soils, we really need to be reducing grazing pressures and, as I say, recovering our woodlands and planting a lot more trees.
Scrub
is not a dirty word. I think sometimes, you know, certain land managers out there see scrub as something you want to get rid of immediately. And indeed, some of the rules that Europe has imposed have actually meant that scrub has been inappropriately cleared from farms in acts of vandalism in recent years, which has been another one of the failures of the common agricultural policy. So bringing forests and woodland and scrub back into our landscapes, and particularly the uplands, I think is a key aspect of this policy.
And just to touch very briefly on deer management, which is another controversial area, you are proposing rather stricter rules and a heavier regulatory hand on deer management.
Yeah, we don't propose regulation unless we thought long and hard about it and we think it's appropriate, because we don't want to put extra burdens on the land management community unless they're really required. But in the case of deer management, we've had a voluntary approach for a number of years now, and it just hasn't worked. And it's not working, and I can't see it working. So we need a stricter regulatory regime where land managers are compelled to bring down deer densities to levels where the vegetation can start to recover.
So is there going to be a cost of extra advisors? Lots of blokes with beards and degrees in plant biology with a passion for moss. Are we going to be spending a lot more money on these beardy types?
There's a certain advantage in making sure that you plan the works that you're going to do effectively and understand what the outcome is going to be. And in order to do that, you do need experts to come and work with farmers to say, okay, what is it we're trying to achieve here with the money we have available? What's the outcome we're trying to seek on this farm? I can help you with that. The farmers also, of course, you know, they will tell you that they know their farm better than anybody else.
Yes.
So a combination of expertise and on-the-ground, local, hyper-local knowledge, I think, is a good combination. So having those two sets of people working together, I think, will be very valuable. So yes, there will be, of course. The 600 million at the moment is payments that are going to farmers. There is a separate pot of money within the Scottish Government which is paying for advisors through not just central government but its agencies as well. So, for example, Scottish rural universities and colleges will, I'm sure, continue to play an active role in working with farmers and landowners to make sure that the right advice is provided. It's not a bad thing having, you know, these beardy types coming to you farm and helping you spend the money more wisely, I would suggest.
I mean, it is one of the big challenges of something like this, is persuading, you know, farmers are very tough, they're financially challenged and financially minded. It's going to be difficult to sell it to them.
Well, yes. I mean, I think I would agree that any change there's going to be a certain set or a certain kind of percentage of people who are not going to like that change. But change is inevitable, particularly in this time where we're facing huge upheaval with Brexit. And as I say, change is often a chance to do things better and to do things, frankly, in the public interest, using this public money, because it needs to be spent in the public interest. So I think there will be, just as there'll be a percentage of farmers which will be reluctant to embrace this change, there will be some which will be very happy to do things differently. And that's what we're already seeing. We're hearing from many farmers and some of the landowning organisations, for example, Scottish Land and Estates, who've largely welcomed this proposal. The Scottish Tenant Farmers Association have done the same, as have the timber industry through Confor, the industry body, who've all read it and said that it's not just a plausible proposal, but there's many, many things in it they welcome. So we're actually achieving consensus across sectors here. What we've tried to design here is something which balances the need to produce timber and food and other commodities from the land, whilst at the same time achieving a high degree of environmental stewardship. So we're not creating what's called those environmental externalities, so those costly consequences of managing land badly, which ultimately are a cost to the taxpayer, and they include things like soil degradation and water pollution and biodiversity loss. So if we can get this right, then we can move forward not just as the environmental sector, but we can move forward as the land management sector, the farming sector, the freshwater managers as well, and the environmentalists. If we can move forward together and agree on a new system which is a lot better than the Common Agricultural Policy, I think we can make great strides in Scotland and actually position us, as I've said, as a real leader in the production of extremely high quality food.
And you've got to persuade the Scottish Government about this now. How's that going?
We are in regular dialogue with a team just across the road here at the Scottish Government, Victoria Quay. We've already had some interesting sit-down meetings with them. There's more planned. We're seeking a meeting about this with not just the Environment Minister, but with the Rural Economy Minister, Fergus Ewing, in the coming months. We'll also be speaking to the UK Government as well.
Because this could apply across the whole of the UK.
It could apply. You could take this and you could apply it pretty much anywhere.
Scale it by 10.
In the UK, yeah. There may be different issues. For example, peatland restoration may not be relevant in certain parts of Norfolk or whatever, although they have fen peat
there.
They've
got plenty of peat, yeah.
So there may be tweaks to, for example, the special funds. But the idea that you have a three-tier natural capital maintenance, enhancement and restoration payments, I think can apply anywhere. And the general formula for the way we've proposed that the hundreds of millions should be spent could apply anywhere. So regardless, really, of whether it's the UK government who are setting the framework for agriculture in the future or whether that power comes back to the Scottish government, this will be relevant and can be used by either. So we will be promoting it south of the border as well as north of the border.